Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten. Mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnen? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto. Das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
You're listening to World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. Plenty coming up in the programme. As always, we're going to look at the problem of over-tourism. We're going to talk about another record day for the Nasdaq as well. But we're going to devote quite a bit of the programme to this particular story because the growing popularity of social media has led to the growth of huge companies like Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram. But there are, of course, we talk about this a lot, don't we? Concerns about the impact that those social media apps are having on children. Well, now in the United States, the Surgeon General, one of the highest figures when it comes to public health, Dr. Vivek Murthy, has called for a warning label to be placed on social media platforms, advising of the damage they pose to adolescents' mental health. Speaking on the Today program on NBC in the United States, he said it's the number one concern of parents.
They want to know, is this safe for my kids? How should I manage it? And what the data is telling us, Savannah, is not only have companies not demonstrated that their platforms are safe for kids, but there is growing evidence of harm. What has happened over the last nearly two decades that social media has been around is truly unconscionable when it comes to the health of our kids.
Okay, let's hear some different views on this. Firstly, we're going to hear from Anton Behar. He's the former director of protection care at Facebook. He gave evidence to Congress last year stating that social media companies need to do more to protect children.
I think every parent knows, after seeing their kids spending hours on it, that there's a meaningful problem here. And so I really appreciate the Surgeon General's take to raise awareness for parents.
Do you think that having a warning would actually have any impact at all? Wouldn't kids just ignore it anyway?
I think that every lawmaker should use whatever tool they have at their disposal to make this better. And the Surgeon General has warnings as a tool, and I think warnings can be helpful to raise awareness in kids and parents' part of the issues here. But what's really needed is meaningful regulation that incentivizes companies to actually reduce the harm that they enable. Warnings are part of what should be put in place. The warning might not have a profound effect, but I think anything that helps parents understand that when their kids are on social media, it's very likely that they're going to have harmful experiences in a way that we wouldn't accept from any other company in the world or any other context.
A lot of people say that when we're looking at social media companies, if you do want to get them to change their behavior, they would say that they don't need to change their behavior, I'm sure. That hitting them financially is going to be the most important tool that you can use. Would this hit them financially, do you think?
If it reduces problematic usage, the people that spend so long on there that it's bad for them, I think it would affect them that way. That the day that Mark Zuckerberg has to say, last quarter we made this many billion dollars, and this is the number of teenagers that experienced unwanted advances on Instagram, is a day that they will actually do meaningful work to reduce that.
Do you think advertisers would be less willing to get involved with social media companies if there was a warning on the app?
I certainly hope so. I hope that advertisers look at all of the information that has reached the light of day about the effects of social media on teenagers, and they start moving their money elsewhere to products that are not actively harming our kids.
You hope that will be the case. There don't seem to be any signs that that's the case.
The advertiser aspect of this is hard because when I did my whistleblowing, I mean, the numbers that I brought into the light are staggering in terms of harm of teenagers. And I hoped that there would be an impact on the advertising front, but that did not seem to be the case. And so we really need our regulators to do all they can to help protect our children.
I'm sure that you must be asking yourself the question that you posed there. Why didn't we see that impact, do you think?
I believe that every advertiser, when they sign a contract to advertise on Facebook, they should sign a piece of paper that acknowledges that they understand the harm that Facebook is having on children, that Instagram is having on children. And then I would want to see whether they continue investing their money there, because otherwise it seems that sometimes people just look away, or they're soothed by the stance of the company who talks about these issues in a way that's profoundly misleading.
When it comes to youngsters on social media, the companies put in place restrictions when it comes to age, don't they? And also, they would say they spend hundreds of millions of dollars now trying to protect children. They say they're doing more.
No, things have not meaningfully changed since I was there 2 years ago and after my whistleblowing, because the company seems to insist on doing its own definition of harm. Until we see meaningful changes where teenagers get supported with bullying and harassment, until we see features that reduce unwanted sexual advances based on data, until we as a society have transparency of these issues the same way we ask of health, any food industry, that we ask of the car industry, as the Surgeon General said, until we have that kind of transparency on harm, how are we to know that anything that they're doing is having any impact other than generating positive press for them?
The social media companies come under a lot of criticism for the way that youngsters are using social media. But doesn't a lot of that responsibility lie with parents as well?
I think that's what social media companies would like you to believe. Question should really be, how many hours a day is good for a kid to be on social media? And to put all of this on parents without giving them like good tools to manage that is this willful disregard and disavowing of their responsibility in creating a product that encourages a teenager to pick up their phone hundreds of times a day.
We have approached Better to respond to some of the criticisms there by its former director of protection of care at Facebook. They, of course, own Facebook and Instagram for comment. We have not had a response from them so far. I want to bring in a familiar voice on the program, Peter Jankowskis, who looks at the markets for us often. Peter, do you see this is clearly an increasing debate around some of the world's most valuable companies at the moment. Is that putting investors off from putting money into these companies?
Well, there seemed to be a little bit of pressure on Meta's stock today. It opened the day down about 1%. It did rally back and post a gain of about 0.5%, but it was well behind other technology names on the day. So I think you are seeing some impact from this. You're seeing impact from some of the antitrust lawsuits. All of those are putting pressure on these social media companies.
Stay with us, Peter, because I want to bring in the thoughts on this issue of Dr. Jerome Adams. He's a former Surgeon General who worked in the Donald Trump administration.
I think it's important that the current Surgeon General is shining a light on this issue. But he put out a social media advisory in 2023 where he highlighted the fact that this is oftentimes bidirectional. When you think about LGBTQ plus youth, for instance, they often find comfort in social media when they can't find that comfort at home. So the question that remains is a Surgeon General's warning, which is what the current Surgeon General has called for, a step too far or just the right step? And I would say that I think the attention is appropriate, but I don't know that the evidence is there right now the way it has been for past Surgeon General's warnings.
If you are still in the job, who knows, you may get it again at some point in the future. Would you put adverts on social media apps? Is that what you would do to tackle this problem?
If I were in this role, I can't say that I would put a Surgeon General's warning. First of all, important to understand, you can't do that without congressional approval. And so you'd have
to... But would you push for congressional approval on this?
Would this be near the top of your list of how you would tackle social media? To be direct with you, that would not be where I would direct my attention. I would direct my attention to working with the companies and working with Congress to actually, and state legislatures, to hold the companies accountable more so than putting a social media warning out there. As a parent, most parents know this is a problem. We want action.
Peter, interesting to hear from a former Surgeon General there. We talked about investors. What about advertisers? They still seem to see this, don't they, as a good mechanism for them to get their message across, particularly to younger people.
Indeed. The impact of social influencers is very powerful in building brand awareness and also driving sales. So I see them as continuing to use this medium to reach their target audience.
There are parallels, and the Surgeon General was trying to do this when he was drawing comparisons with tobacco companies. Now, the social media companies will say, look, we do not cause as much harm as tobacco has done to people. But do you see this debate growing and growing and growing? It seems to be one of the big sort of business ethical stories of our time.
Well, I'd almost turn that on its head with the tobacco analogy. There's a product that, you know, led to massive lawsuits, very graphic warning labels, and yet it continues to be consumed, continues to have companies that operate that are quite profitable. So there really hasn't been a impact in terms of eliminating the threat. And I wouldn't think the same would happen, could happen with social media. You're going to increase awareness at the margin, hopefully mitigate some of the bad effects at the margin, but you're not going to be able to eliminate it.
Okay, let's just have a quick look at the markets now. The NASDAQ, record highs again. When's it going to end?
That's a very good question. I still think that a key to all this is interest rates. Once again, we've had a bout of optimism due to one favorable inflation report that has everyone thinking, okay, the Fed is going to cut more aggressively. But the Fed continues to push back against that. So I would expect that we're going to be in that continual back and forth here where we'll set some record highs, but then there'll be pullbacks. And we're probably in reality looking for what happens right after the election. I think that's what I'm looking to next.
Yep. 3rd of November, big date in the U.S.
Beim Big Mac sind sich alle einig. Schon probiert? Den legendären Big Mac gibt's jetzt in zwei weiteren Varianten. Den Double Big Mac für den doppelten Genuss und den Big Mac Bacon TS mit knusprigem Bacon. Nur für kurze Zeit und nur bei McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. In allen teilnehmenden Restaurants, nur solange der Vorrat reicht.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
S, you're with World Business Report here from the BBC World Service. Right. Let's look at shipping. Denmark says it's looking to limit the passage of tankers carrying Russian oil through the Baltic Sea. Here's Adrian Murray.
As a result of the invasion of Ukraine and the price caps imposed by Western nations on its oil, Russia has been forced to use a so-called shadow fleet of tankers, which are often aging vessels registered outside of the West. In a statement to the BBC, Denmark's Foreign Minister Lars Løkke Rasmussen described the shadow fleet as an international problem that requires international solutions. It's understood other EU countries and Baltic Sea states are involved in discussions with Danish officials, but it's unclear what specific measures are being considered. Local media have suggested that the aging tankers might be subjected to insurance checks because of concerns that they could pose an environmental threat in order to deter their passage through the Baltic.
Right. We were talking about the elections There, both major parties in the US have been busy raising funds in the run-up to that election over the weekend. The Biden campaign said it raised at least $28 million at a fundraiser in Los Angeles. In May, Donald Trump's campaign and its affiliated committees announced they'd raised $141 million. It's all a lot of money. Does it have much of an impact? Here to tell us is David Brookman. He is Associate Professor of Politics at the University of California, Berkeley Director for American Democracy. Thank you so much for joining us on the program, David.
I mean,
it's huge sums of money. Is it going to change the elections?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, I think there's sort of a paradox in American campaign finance, which is on the one hand, you know, we now have a lot of careful studies and data showing that, you know, the effects of this campaign spending are very small. It takes maybe about $1,000, maybe a little bit more than $1,000 to change one vote in a presidential election. So, you know, most of these mailers, most of these TV ads, the vast majority of the time, it doesn't make a difference. People are hard to persuade. The flip side, though, is there's a ton of money spent. You know, we're going to see well over $1 billion, you know, multiple billions of dollars probably trying to change people's votes this year in the U.S. And so when you multiply a really big pile of money by even small effects in very close elections, it could make a difference.
It could. And this could be quite a close election. Could it? That number, sorry, $1 billion. I mean, that is staggering, isn't it? I mean,
At least, I expect we'll see probably multiple billions.
Okay, and how does that compare to the last election? Are we looking at a sort of 10% increase? Is it running bigger than
well,
that, do you think?
You know, we'll have to see on election day how much ends up getting spent. But, you know, for the last few presidential elections, we've seen just in every election spending go up and up and up. And that's from a mix of, you know, wealthy people giving more and more to what we this special thing we have here in America called super PACs, where wealthy people and corporations can give unlimited money to kind of organizations to spend money in elections, as well as just everyday people opening their wallets, giving $10, $25 as people get more and more engaged. So I expect we'll see even more of both this year than we did in 2020.
That last point is interesting, isn't it? Because we know historically, you know, the people who have a lot of money would like to use that money sometimes to sort of, in some ways, to get their say in what's taking place. But there are a lot of ordinary Americans who chuck in $10, $20.
That's right. Yeah, we have you know, an interesting system here where you know, the average person, you know, if when I'm in America and scrolling my Facebook feed or Instagram feed, tons of ads from, you know, candidates from president all the way on down to, you know, local city council member asking me to pitch in money. And, you know, a fair amount of money comes from those everyday people giving $10, $25, you know, $50. Of course, that's not all of it. There's some checks that are quite a bit bigger than that that are written as well.
Listen, it is so much money. Are there some who are saying there should be limits placed on how much can be spent?
Yeah, I imagine from, you know, the perspective of the United Kingdom and the rest of the world, our system of campaign finance here must seem rather peculiar. And, you know, in fact, there are some limits in some cases. So, for example, the, you know, the Biden campaign, the Trump campaign, they're not allowed to accept, you know, money of unlimited, you know, donations of unlimited size. Those have to go through what are called super PACs, which is a peculiar kind of organization created by our Supreme Court just over a decade ago, where they said, you know, maybe it'll be corrupting if, say, Donald Trump or Joe Biden could, you know, cash a $100 million check from you. But we, you know, freedom of speech is a very, you know, strong absolute right here in the U.S. And they said, there, you know, that goes far enough that people should be able to say, you know, spend as much money as they want saying whatever they want about elections. That's a hotly debated topic. Not everyone agrees with that, but that was the line of reasoning.
Well, look, thank you so much for joining us on the program, David. We look forward to speaking to you again. Peter, quick one from you on this. That number is just staggering, isn't it? The amount of money.
Yes, it is. Yes, it's quite amazing. In swing states where things are hotly contested, they buy up literally all of the advertising space that's available. All you see is political ads.
Wow.
And what money is not spent on ads is spent on consultants who try to figure out how to set the message, how to drive voter turnout is critical as well.
Let us look at the issue of over-tourism now, because it's something that we talk about a lot on this program. It's something that people feel strongly about. It's an issue that Ed Butler has been looking at.
The sound of protests in Tenerife in the Canary Islands in mid-April. Local men and women blowing conches, carrying banners, proclaiming that the Canary Islands has its limits.
I am incredibly moved by how many people actually came out on that day.
This is Sharon Backhouse. She's a British-born businesswoman who runs Geo Tenerife. It's a travel and research company on the island.
I was there on the ground, and there was people from all walks of life, and the mood was extraordinary. Hundreds of thousands of people on the streets demonstrating, six people on hunger strike for 20 days. And one of the main things they're saying is, please put a stop to any more hotel developments until we can implement a model that is equally good for locals and not just foreign investors.
What we hope is that the demonstration will be historic. We're convinced it will be. The people are finally raising their voices. They're not going to stay at home.
People are frustrated that despite having these incredible, record-breaking tourism numbers, a third of the population is still at a risk of poverty and social exclusion. And what locals are saying is, look, we welcome tourism, we have for a long time, and we will continue to do so. But the locals have to be prime beneficiaries too.
Tenerife is not the first place to see such protests. Over tourism, as it's known, the influx of camera-toting visitors into small areas of natural beauty is being seen as a growing problem. They've prompted outcry in Machu Picchu in Peru, on Bali's sacred mountain, and from Egypt's pyramids to Mount Fuji in Japan. There, in one town, they've put up a wall to block the view of the mountain to deter the relentless photography.
We welcome foreigners for this revitalization of the community, but there are so many violations of basic manners, like jaywalking, dumping garbage, trespassing on people's property. I wish they'd pay more attention to that.
European cities, with their record-breaking visitor numbers, have become the epicenter of a growing anti-tourist sentiment now. Coke Owens is a professor of new urban tourism at In Holland University in the Netherlands.
First of all, there's the numbers of tourists. So many people on the streets. You can't move freely anymore. People drinking too much, being rowdy and that sort of thing. And then places have become more and more suitable for tourists rather than for residents. And in city centres you can see local supermarkets, or local bakeries or other local facilities not being able to afford to rent anymore because there are tourist shops now.
Most tourist hotspots, of course, seek the economic benefits, but they are also coming up with different ideas to solve the excesses. Take Venice, which last month became the first city to charge tourists coming on day trips to enter the city. Simone Venturini is the city's deputy mayor for tourism.
Right now, Venice is trying to restart better than before. We just want less tourism in terms of quantity, and we want higher tourism in terms of quality. Not only to take a selfie in 3 hours and then go home, because this is not the right tourist for the city of Venice.
The issue of taxation is an interesting one, because it's a relatively easy thing to do. But again, you need to be careful to only talk about the economic benefits. The economic benefits of tourism are relatively limited to a set number of stakeholders, people who work in tourism or who own a business, but most people do not fall into that category, whereas the disadvantages are felt by a much larger group of people.
Professor Coke Owens. The fact is, though, that for all of these ideas to reduce over-tourism, current projections suggest that global travel is going to carry on rising for the foreseeable future, as low-cost air travel and budget rentals make package holidays ever more affordable for ever more people. Some places are expecting a further doubling of visitor numbers over the next decade. Professor Coke Owens says the time is going to come soon when the whole idea of dropping everything and grabbing a cheap flight overseas is going to have to be carefully reassessed.
Do we need 4 holidays in a year? You might want to consider going less often, but going longer if you want your holidays. But that's a change in mentality. That is incredibly difficult, of course, to get people to consider that.
Professor Coke Owens there, ending that report by Ed Butler. You can hear the full report wherever you get your podcast from. Just look for Business Daily. Now, let's talk about movies.
I'm anxiety. I'm one of Riley's new emotions, and we are just super jazzed to be here. Where can I put my stuff?
If you're wondering what that is, that's a clip from Inside Out 2, which has done extremely well at the box office after it opened this weekend. I've been speaking to Deadline's box office editor, Nancy Tartiglione.
I mean, it sounds silly, but joyously, incredibly, amazingly, it's wonderful. It's beyond expectations.
Can we put some numbers on that? And also the sort of response you get when you speak to exhibitors, et cetera, is a bit of a phew, finally something doing well?
I mean, look, $295 million global, 140 of that coming from overseas. And very important to remember that the overseas markets, the movie's not even out in, you know, a lot of the European majors. So it's a massive number for domestic, for North America, 155, and then the 140 overseas. Really extraordinary.
First film to make 100 million. Since Barbie in that first weekend. I was interested there when you said the market's been wonky and people don't quite understand why it's been like that. Why do you think it's been so difficult?
First quarter of this year was actually perhaps even stronger than maybe we thought it might have been. You know, Dune Part 2 did really well. But we're coming out of a period, the strikes, the dual strikes that following COVID and things were getting a little bit back to, you know, not normal, but, you know, starting to approach that, and the amaze phenomenon of Barbie and Oppenheimer last year. But then when we had the dual Hollywood strikes, it set production back quite a bit, which then forced some films to exit 2024, the year we're currently in calendar. And so one constant, you know, refrain from the industry is that there is a lack of product, and we just haven't had this kind of momentum, which is really important to keep people in the habit of going to the movies.
We had Bad Boys, didn't we? The new Bad Boys movie out that did well.
Yes, and then also that kind of, you know, that sort of kind of kickstarted just before Inside Out. So it's been a great couple of weeks, and we've got a great summer ahead. We do have some. You know, a lot to look forward to.
There is. Sorry to interrupt you. There is a lot to look forward to. But on that wider point that people make about streaming and people not wanting to go to the movies so much, because there is other content out there now, that is a factor, and that's not going to change, is it?
Certainly became, you know, obviously more important during the lockdowns and, you know, all of this kind of stuff in the pandemic. But it's not going to change, but there is, when you see communal experience, when you see what happens in a theater, and when you see people, you know, this weekend, the tracking for Inside Out 2 wasn't spot on. It's been very difficult to track movies in general in terms of what they're going to open to. There was so much walk-up business because I think to a degree, you know, it's been suggested to me that people were waiting to hear the reactions. So then that meant that the second day, the third day, you know, et cetera, got bigger and bigger. And that those are events, and people want to be part of those events, just like they did with Barbie and Oppenheimer, you know? So that does get people off their couches.
It certainly has done this weekend, Nancy Tartaglione there. Peter, have you been to see this film? Are you tempted with it?
I am tempted by it. I enjoyed the first one. I thought it was a very creative premise. And from everything I've read, it sounds like they've basically done it again.
Have you got out of the habit of going to the cinema? Are you stuck on your sofa?
Yeah, I tend to stay at home more and watch things on streaming. It's just easier, more convenient. Mm. But for something like this, I might give the theaters another try.
Well, who knows? Next time we have Peter on the program, maybe he'll be giving us a little review of his trip to the cinema to watch Inside Out. Peter Jankowski, it's a pleasure having you on the program. That is it for this edition of World Business Report.
Schatz, wir müssen los zu meiner Mutter.
Oh, ich kann leider nicht mit. Der Mähroboter mäht immer noch nicht, wo er soll.
Immer findest du eine Ausrede.
Ja, nein, das ist nicht so leicht.
Sonst läuft bei dir doch auch alles automatisch. Weniger Ausreden, mehr Automatisierung. Damit's funktioniert, Husqvarna. Stimme deinen Husqvarna-Mähroboter durch individuelle Installation exakt auf deine Anforderungen ab. Entdecke jetzt echte Innovation und Aktionsangebote für Mähroboter auf husqvarna.de oder bei deinem Husqvarna-Fachhändler. Get it right. Husqvarna.